Think big. Think positive. Never show any sign of weakness. Always go for the throat. Buy low, sell high. Fear, that's the other guy's problem. Nothing you have ever experienced can prepare you for the unbridled carnage you're about to witness. Right. Super Bowl, the World Series, they don't know what pressure is. In this building, it's either kill or be killed. Right. You make no friends in the pits and you take no prisoners.
No prisoners.
1 minute, you're up half a million in soybeans, and the next, boom, your kids don't go to college and they've repossessed your Bentley. Are you with me?
Hello and welcome to Turner's Take Podcast. I'm your host, Craig Turner, author of Turner's Take Newsletter. If you'd like to know more about me, go on ahead to turnerstakeag.com. I work with hedgers, speculators, broker-assisted online traders. We have a great online trading platform. Hybrid is a very popular category. I'm a broker here at Daniels Trading, as well as the publisher of that newsletter and this podcast. So feel free to contact me anytime. All my contact information is in those show notes. And if you do get Turner's Take Newsletter or Turner's Take Ag Marketing, you can always reply to one of those newsletters and it comes directly to me. So let's get into it. It is Wednesday morning here on the trade desk. It has been it's been a quiet week. Which, you know, after the past couple of months, it's actually been very, very busy. So we are having a little bit of a quiet period here in the markets now. So let's go through it. Same format as always. We're going to start about the macro economy. We are expecting the Fed to cut interest rates by 25 basis points. I know there were some people thinking out there it could be 50. Others weren't thinking anything. I think the market and industry as a whole is looking for a quarter of a point. What's going to be interesting about this, and you know, if you listen to this before the Fed announcement, or if you listen to it later tonight or tomorrow and it's after the Fed announcement, take a look to see what the Fed says about future rate cuts. And that's going to be telling. You know, does the Fed say, hey, we're just doing a quarter now, and let's see how this goes? Or do they see this is going to be easing for the foreseeable future because of the weak economy? And that's going to give us some tells. So let's take a look at that. Make sure you do. I'll also update it in my newsletter, but something you can look at later. A couple interesting notes on the economy. Home building has been higher. It surged to a 12-month high this past August. So that was surprising to see. Mortgage demands were jumping up as interest rates rose last week too. So maybe people think interest rates are going to go higher on the mortgage market, which seems a little counterintuitive with the Fed cutting rates, but you never know. We'll keep an eye on that. Also, in kind of macro news, we've seen Trump, and we're going to get to crude oil towards the end of the podcast and what happened over the weekend, but you know, Trump ordered increased sanctions on Iran. So I might as well just jump into energy now because that's part of the macro picture. So over the weekend, you know, Saudi Arabia was attacked. Their oil supply was attacked by, you know, not exactly sure who it is. Allegedly, you know, it came from Iran. You don't know if it was a you know, a independent group, part of the government, some kind of quasi mix of both. Who knows? At this point, I certainly don't. But it did end up taking out some of the crude, a lot of the crude oil production in Saudi Arabia. Initial reports, it was up to half of their crude oil. Now, Saudi Arabia is responsible for 5% of all, I think, crude oil production. So when you take out half of 5%, that's a big deal. People were talking about on the weekend crude going to be limit up, which is 7%. You know, we were going to be up $10, $5. We were going to be, you know, someone was saying crude go to 100 again, all this stuff. Turns out we were up $7, which I got to tell you, if this had happened when stocks were tight, we would have been up huge. And the reason why we're not, we weren't up like $15 and just crazy time in the crude on Monday, which was big. I'm not saying $7 wasn't big, but considering what happened, it could have been a lot bigger. And it just goes to show that if you don't, you know, if there is supply out there and there's reserves out there, which there are, and demand isn't going through the roof, it's the price shocks aren't going to be that bad, which is going to be a very good point to remember in grain markets and in livestock, all right, as we go through this next year. So crude is already backing off. What ended up happening is the Saudi Arabian energy minister basically came out and said, hey, you know, we have so much in storage, we can, you know, help with the lost production. Plus, the damage wasn't as bad as we thought it was, so in September we'll be able to meet all of our, you know, all of the supply, you know, all the supply for the demand that's expected, between how much they can repair, plus everything that's in stock, because crude ice has been low. Saudi Arabia has actually been holding back on selling to help raise the price, and they've been storing so much crude, they have the overfill to do that. And then hopefully by November they'll be up to 100% again. So it should be a, I mean, from what they say, it's not going to be, it's not a huge deal, or as worse or as bad as people may have originally seemed. And that's why crude's backing off here. Now the spreads are still elevated. The price is still elevated. I mean, crude's still about 58. You know, I think we were about like 52 or 53 from the weekend. So we're still up $5, I want to say. But it's not as bad as we thought. So what was interesting, to bring this back to the macro part of the podcast, is that Trump ordered, first he sent out a tweet about United States locked and loaded, ready to do, talking tough, but that's not really his way. You know, he's definitely, in my opinion, been more of a financial war kind of guy, rather than a military conflict. If anything, if you've listened to him, or from what I've listened to him over the past couple of years, he wants to withdraw troops all the time, which... not saying this is right or wrong, I'm just saying, like, this is his strategy. And it also seems like when there is conflict, he prefers financial and trade conflict to military conflict. So, you know, his initial, you know, I mean, his initial responses were locked and loaded, but, you know, today he ordered an increase in, you know, in sanctions in Iran, no military action, which another reason why crude was lower. You know, one of the things we were really concerned about on Monday was not so much that Iran, or not Iran, some faction out of Iran sent drones to, you know, bomb an oil facility and pipelines in Saudi Arabia. Was what happens on the escalation. Because if it's a one-time issue, kind of like a natural disaster, you know, we get a hurricane through the Gulf of Mexico and it takes out some oil rigs. Yeah, energy prices go up, but we all know that's eventually coming back online, right? It's a short-term issue. You know, with the oil thing in the Middle East, if it's just a one-time attack, then it's a short-term issue. But if we escalate and it's all of a sudden it's you're getting into a conflict there between different nations, then that's something else. That's something different entirely. So it was... I'm thinking Trump is just thinking that, you know, military conflicts are too costly. No one really wins. Especially between countries that have nuclear weapons, and he just prefers economic measures, and that's just the way it seems. So in that case, and we'll get into this a little bit later, I kind of think the China thing is going to drag on, but it does seem like the energy prices, and I don't see a whole escalation military, you know, with the military, at least with the United States military, but in Iran. And the whole Saudi Arabia thing, but we will see. So that is the macro picture right now. I guess the big global macro news would be looking to see what's going on in the Middle East, and then at home here domestically, let's see what happens with the Fed and what they say later today. The weather, we're going to switch on over to the ag markets. Let's just get the weather out of there real quick. Central forecast above average temperatures, and that should aid crop development. I know... as we were heading in September, we were thinking, hey, maybe we get some colder weather, we get some frost, we get a rally here, but it's actually just the opposite. I don't see any frost in the forecast, you know, all the way into October 6th, which is the latest models I've seen. Plus, U.S. weather has been pretty good, and it's been warm. This whole week's going to be warm, so that should aid crop development. I'm not saying all is saved and we're going back to trend line yields, but I think corn's going to be in the 160s. I don't think we're going to be sub 160. I don't think we're going to be over 170. But we're going to be in the mid, probably mid 160s. And then with soybeans, we may come down too. But, you know, this is certainly helping some soybeans. That progress report on Monday was interesting, though. 3.8 million acres of soybeans hadn't set potting yet. Now, that was interesting because that represents... let's just get my calculator out here if I can find it. I found it. Here we go. So 3.8 million acres, and let's say the trend line yields 47. So that's about 180 million That represents, in theory, depending where these acres are, but let's just call it somewhere between, I don't know, let's just call it 175, 180 million soybeans. Could be higher, could be lower, depending on where these fields are. But just to, you know, at 3.8 million acres, I haven't set pods. Are we going to lose all those? Are we going to lose half of them? Let's say we lose half. You know, maybe we take, you know, 80 million bushels off the top right there on production, and the stuff that does, you know, eventually set pods. How good could those yields possibly be if we're setting pods in late September? I don't know. I think that's tough. So soybeans can be interesting. The only problem is, as I talked about with, you know, with the crude oil, you know, and the whole example of we only were up $7 on, you know, Sunday and Monday, is the demand. And we had African swine flu again being an issue today. We saw the second case of swine flu was reported in South Korea. We're seeing rumors now in Thailand. And it really seems all of Asia is going to have to... All of Asia seems to... going to have to fight this one way or another. And it's going to be a different fight for each country and on a different scale. But it seems like... it has not been contained between countries, that it will eventually leak, if it hasn't already, through all of Asia, and then it's just going to be basically, you know, how do they contain this? What's interesting, though, you know, you look at the hog prices here in the United States, and, you know, they could be higher. They certainly could be, especially if we were exporting a lot of hogs, but, you know, because of what we put into our animals, whether it be hormones or the type of grain we feed it or whatever it may be, different countries have different rules about what they'll accept. And China, really, you know, for a lot of the pork that we produce, are not interested in what we're doing. So, you know, that's the problem on the demand side. Actually, hold on one second here. So I think the issue is there is a growth drug that's banned in a lot of countries. What is it? Racoppamine. And basically, the pork industry feeds that in the United States. I want to say it's over half of American hogs have that into it. And if that growth drug is in our pork, a lot of countries don't want it. So while it's legal here, either what's going to have to happen is these nations are going to have to change their rules about accepting pork from us, or they're just going to have to switch to other things. So that keeps our pork kind of market low, because even though the supply around the world is decreasing, it doesn't mean the demand for our product is going to increase. So that is going to be an issue with not just livestock, not just with hogs. So that, in my mind, unless they start making rules around the world, you're just going to have to switch protein preference. So it could be good for beef. You would think either way beef would be the winner here. It hasn't to the extent. I don't think that Tyson fire helped, but you'd think eventually by the end of the year that would be good for it. And the hogs remain to be seen. We'll see other protein switches into more poultry and fish. But just because all the swine flu is going on, it doesn't necessarily have to be bullish for U.S. product if we have basically, you know, drugs and hormones in our animals that they won't buy. So just always keep that in mind when you hear these swine flu things. So that's really what we're looking at on the livestock side. What's another problem here is that long term, you know, it's going to take a long time to rebuild those herds. You know, it's also going to take a long time to get that feed demand back up. So that's not good, for soybeans and soy meal. And also, you know, as a competitor, it's not that great for corn and wheat. Also, I mean, if feed grade demand is going to be, you know, lower, that just hurts. That hurts all the feed components out there, you know, meal, soybeans, and the corn and the wheat together. Hurts soybeans and meal the most, but it definitely has an effect on everything. But some other things that have been going on in the trends, you know, Ukraine traders are pushing for higher limits on wheat shipments. Right now they export about 19 million metric tons. They want to be about 20 million metric tons. It just sounds like, and they're ahead of pace, it just sounds like to me that Russia and Ukraine underestimate their stocks. They want to be able to export more. What does that do? keeps world wheat prices down, keeps U.S. wheat prices down, kind of puts a cap on corn prices too, because of that feed, component. So, not great. So as we look into here, like, I still think we can rally a little bit in the old crop, in the deferreds, but, you know, corn 375, 380, I don't know how much more we can go above that. You know, with soybeans, November soybeans testing $9, I was kind of hoping we go to 910, 920. I don't know about that anymore either. I mean, China did make goodwill purchases of soybeans, you know, ahead of talks with the U.S. I got some calls this week saying, hey, China's buying soybeans, what's going on? And we kind of, fortunately, had to put the brakes on that a little bit, pump the brakes, just because, you know, they always do this. You know, they say they're going to buy grain, soybeans, they don't. President Trump complains. They still don't buy soybeans. Then right before they have the trade negotiations, they come in and they buy soybeans. And then they go to the trade negotiations. And, you know, it's just not enough. So that's not great either. So if we don't get some kind of supply shock, which is always short-term in nature, all supply shocks are short-term in nature, unless you get two or three in a row, and then it can have a lasting effect for a couple of seasons. Without the demand, you know, the demand driver, the path of least resistance is lower. So going forward, you know, we're getting to the point here where we don't have frost in the forecast. I don't know how much, it's going to be a tough time to sell as guys are harvesting. And unless we get a lot worse, you know, reports of yield here in the field, it's going to be tough for the market to rally. So I don't love being long futures in the front months. I think I'd rather be long options just to have a limited risk. Or if you're going to buy futures, buy a put underneath it, right? And then what I've been also doing is we've done that. If we do get the big rally, maybe selling a call way up on top to pay for that original put. And that's kind of the long front month strategy we have for anyone who wants to play kind of the smaller crop, which it could be. I wouldn't be surprised if it was. I'm just skeptical on how big this rally could be. There are gaps on the chart. You know, 380 up to 390 in corn is a potential target, but it's going to be tough to get up there without some, you know, a real big reason to move, which would be a frost, or the yields are a lot worse than they're coming in. So we'll just, so that's one thing. The other thing is these rallies really need to be sold in 20 and 21. I like buying puts and selling calls for D's 20. It is a marginal position. I'll have some recommendations about that in Turner's Take Ag Marketing. If you don't receive it, you can go to Turner's Take Ag and sign up for it and take a look. I also like the 2021 spread. We're around 10 cents, D's 20 versus D's 21, 10 cent carry. I think we can go next year at least 30 cents lower, if not more, now that the storage rates are increasing at the exchange. For soybeans, you know, I'm thinking about for 2020 buying, you know, $9 puts, trying to sell calls in the $10 range. It's a marginal position. Guys who don't like that, the idea of being short a call, I like bear spreads. I mean, Nov 20 versus 21 is around even. Maybe it's like 2 or 4 cent carry. I mean, right now the 19 versus 20 is 60 cents. You know, if we have a good production year and demand, I don't see demand getting better. I think the writing's on the wall for the next year with the swine flu issues. So why shouldn't the soybean spreads eventually go to pretty much approach full carry? So a nice way to hedge the basis, hedge cash prices, hedge, you know, have a partial hedge on the crop, November 20 against November 21. They aren't big margins. There is a little bit of risk to the upside, but like any, there's no risk of not doing anything either. There's a bigger risk of not doing anything right now. So here's the deal. This really is the crux of what we're coming into next year. The more we crunch the numbers, the worse it looks for next year. And what you need to do is you need to start selling in 20 and 21 on the board where you've got these big carries. And then in periods of time where you can have rallies, which would be during Brazil planting and growing. There are certain, you know, if it starts to get dry, you know, during our planting season, during our growing season, there are little windows. They're not big windows, by the way. They're, you know, where if the conditions are right, we can rally, right? During those times, if we want to buy some short-term options, or if we want to buy a little bit of futures, you know, against the far dated like 20 and 21 hedges we have in, that's great. Otherwise, what we want to do, I'm going to have to put you on hold 1 second. But, all right, I'm back. So basically, the idea is the priority is to sell the back months, collect the carry. Alrighty, and whether we do that with buying puts and selling calls, or doing the bear spreads like 20 versus 21, or just getting outright short the 20 and 21, however we do that, we need to get serious about locking in some of that. And then if you're concerned about higher prices, because we do, there are times during the year where we can, seasonally, we can rally, we can always buy some cheap short-term calls, or buy a little bit of futures if that's, you know, if you want. You don't have to if you want, but I'd rather have that option out there, because the problem is too many farmers that I work with don't want to get aggressive in 20 and 21 months, and which I agree with if stocks are tight, but U.S. stocks are not going to be tight and global stocks are not going to be tight. Could be a challenging year next year. So, and also, if you ever look at the charts for 20 and 21, the prices don't fluctuate the way they do in the near months. The near months fluctuate a lot more. So we can lock in some long-term stuff here, and then we just know that in the future, if we ever did want to get a little bit long or kind of hedge against it, we can always do that in the short term with short-term options, weekly options, a monthly option, a futures, you know, if we're heading into a report or something like that. We can always do that. I think that is a much better way than not doing anything at all. I think, you know, the fact that Dease corn, I mean, December 20 corn is 404. March 21 corn is 415. December 21 corn is 415. If we have over 90 million acres next year, and we have a trend line yield, and this demand situation doesn't get any better, we're going to be somewhere between 2.5 and 3 billion carryout. And right, you know, now, we could... There's always the risk you have the late planting. It's always the risk that you have the summer months, but those are the short-term options are for. Because if we just end up, look at how bad the season was this year and where these yields are going to be. Right? So, I don't know. I think that's the way to do it. I mean, if we had global stocks that were tight and U.S. stocks were tight, I would say this is not the plan for you. There are other ways to go about your marketing, but that is not the case this year. And going into next year, that is not the case at all. So listen, if you listen to this and you don't have a marketing account, give me a call. If you haven't talked to me in a while, give me a call. If you want to take a look at what we're doing in some of the marketing, go to Turner's Take Ag. Sign up for Turner's Take Ag Marketing, the newsletter, and all my contact information is in this notes. Thank you everyone who listens to this podcast. If you know anyone who would like this or the newsletter, please forward it over to them. We love positive reviews on iTunes. It helps people find us if they're looking for these types of podcasts. And if you have a chance to rate it on iTunes, that'd be fantastic. And if you have already, thank you very much. Have a great rest of the week, and I'll talk to you all soon.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels trading broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore, investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniels Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniels Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.